when you said yesterday that it's nearly Christmas.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. I want to say good morning to everyone, but I want to start out by just saying music is like poetry and has a message. And history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. You see, words have meanings that we can comprehend, like definitions. And news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now I'm asking you to pull back your musical curtain, our musical curtain, to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora. And you're sure to find our Quest moment where we attempt to make waves. So I want to thank you for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. And again, say good morning. Before we begin, I'd like everyone to be careful of your background noises and feedback because it is coming through on the line, right? Today we have our guest, the Black Librarian, Tamir Davis. We also have our student host, Andrew Coates, and myself, Dr. Richard Bombay. And today we're going to summarize an article which was published by the New Jersey State Attorney General's office. And we're going to examine and summarize some of those points in that article and mainly talk about why was there a reason to even put together a document in the first place. So Quest will summarize. This article will talk about white supremacy in the state of New Jersey. And so I want to begin by having Tamir, the black librarian. What did you think about the article, and what is your summary? That is a very broad question. So let me be more specific and say, from our conversation, I know that you wanted to talk about a little bit of the history of supremacy, racism. Well, you know, don't let me put words in your mouth. Take it away.
Well, when we had talked about it, my mind immediately went to the idea of actually slavery being, New Jersey being the last state to ratify the abolishment of slavery that was actually fostered on the Emancipation Proclamation from out of Galveston, Texas, concerning Juneteenth, since it was so close. But in reading the article, I began to think differently. And the reason why I thought differently was because, for one, the article was dealing with Homeland Security and its preparedness and preparing for white supremacy as its impact, not just on people of African descent, but people of Asian descent, all different type of ethnicities, the LGBT population, and how do we circumvent this threat and the great intense possibilities of a threat taking place, especially due to what happened on January 6, 2021, with the attempt to overthrow the United States government via the White House. So I began to start looking at it differently. And then there's mechanisms in place, and one of those major mechanisms that's in place to circumvent any possibility of a threat against the United States government and its agencies and its people in general is the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, that was started as far back as the early 1900s, 1914, 1915, as a way of being able to make sure America can maintain its sovereignty throughout the world. So it gave me a different way of looking at it, not just in terms of racism, but discrimination in its entirety in the United States of America, and specifically in New Jersey. And that great threat of white supremacy in New Jersey and those particular people who engage in this, whether they're Aryan, whether they're KKK, so on and so forth. But it's very hurtful and dismantling to people who don't believe in their ideas and how they can actually be impacted in so many different ways, and how America can be impacted based on that great threat of January 6, 2021 at the White House.
Okay. That leaves us off. And I want to bring in Andrew Coates. Andrew, good morning, first of all. And, you know, what's your take? What would you like to talk about? Share with us now.
Well, good morning, can you as well?
Background noise.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Well, good morning to you as well. So good to be here. So good to be with the Black Librarian again. It's actually funny because I feel like in this instance, we have a perfect balance here. We have a man who can talk about the history of white supremacy, and me as a young person, I could talk about white supremacy in its modern incarnation. I'm online a lot as a young person, and I can be, and I will gladly be the first to say that white supremacy is now online. That's probably obvious. But when we think of the word white supremacy, especially for the older generations, we think about the physical structures that existed way back when in the day. We think about the KKK. We think about the white hoods. We think about burning crosses on the front yard. We think about all those overt expressions of white supremacy that dominated in the past. We think of the lynchings, the mobs, all that stuff that absolutely existed back in the day. But the very insidious fact, and just a very scary fact, is that white supremacy in those forms, in those overt, explicit forms, is really no longer a thing anymore. It's really become a thing of the past. White supremacists these days, they're not wearing white hoods and chanting slogans. They're wearing khakis and polo shirts. They're wearing pants and boots. They're wearing glasses and hats. They look just like us. The thing about modern white supremacy is that it has cleaned itself up in order to become much more palatable to the American public. It's no longer these overt expressions. It is now implicit phrases. It's now incorrect information and statistics that have permeated the cultural zeitgeist, alternative facts, as has become the new term. It's now a system that exists online. It's Facebook groups and Messenger apps. It's group chats and email chains. That's the form that white supremacy has taken today, and I think that's an extremely important part to properly analyze here, the space that white supremacy occupies in our modern times. It's very different. It's nebulous. It's decentralized. It's so easy these days to fall into what has been called the alt-right pipeline, the convergence of conservatism, far-right populism, neo-Nazism, white supremacy, Christian nationalism, that has all come together online and created this collective alt-right space that exists. That is such a powerful black hole and sucks people deeper and deeper into it until you become a proper white supremacist, until you become a January 6th insurrectionist, until you become the man who shot up the grocery store in Buffalo, New York. It's a very powerful system, and that's something that absolutely needs to be discussed and analyzed for our current modern time.
Okay, Tamir, would you like to respond to some of that information, because he just unloaded there?
Yeah, so what happens is that here's a very important aspect of history. If we look at Nazism in Germany and what made it so powerful, it's because incrementally inculcated itself into the German society, into European society, through laws. It became a legal ramification. It was something that became part of the political reality and the political concepts of being a neo-Nazist. And it permeated throughout all of Europe at one point. And it became a very powerful reality. And just like the way in which you see many white supremacists today who may be correction officers, who may be cops, and that's very dangerous, because if somebody's a correction officer, you have to be as unbiased as possible to maintain a populace of inmates who may come from different backgrounds, different ideas, different concepts, and allow themselves to be able to, you know, exercise their rights as inmates. Those rights to be treated as human beings as much as possible. And what happens is what we see now is you see a lot in the criminal justice institutions whereby white supremacists inculcating their ideas. And in many instances, a lot of Latin Americans and blacks are beaten severely. And some of the gang culture that exists in prisons is fostered by white supremacists who allow the inmates who agree with those ideals to beat on black men and Latin American men in those behind the walls, which is very problematic, and it needs to be something that's rectified immediately, and that's why there's a need.
Okay, well, I do believe we have another participant caller. Good morning, Todd. Is that you on the line?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Okay, good morning.
Burr.
Todd, basically, we're taking a look at the article that you, gratefully shared with us, right? And we're basically just going through a summary. And the question is, why do you think New Jersey took a stand? And we kind of answered it already before you dialed in, because of the January 6th insurrection in D.C. But what do you think about this particular Attorney General article and input that you might add to this discussion this morning?
Well, I don't really have a lot to add. I don't study prison issues. I have a book out about a prisoner named Mumia Abu-Jamal, but his situation is a bit different than what we're discussing here. I mean, what I'm concerned about, though, is what is happening to prisoners nationwide in terms of their conditions, even in terms of their conditions of dealing with this climate change and this weather. I mean, there are changes that are happening in the environment that we have to begin to remember these prisoners and what they're already suffering in terms of just what's been already outlined, what you guys have already outlined. We're also dealing with the climate change. I'm also interested in how is this constant attack on the teaching of history and the teaching of culture, how is that affecting them? Because so many of them have had their lives transformed through that. So I'm very concerned that so many things are happening and that we're not doing a kind of a watchdog group on the prisoners, both in New Jersey as well as nationally, because I know you guys have talked about by now the report that was issued talking about the history of white supremacy in New Jersey. And that New Jersey
right.
is one of the most racist states in the union, and if I have it correctly, the last state in the North to give up slavery.
Exactly.
So we're dealing with a very, very serious climate right now, and we're going to need a lot more watchdogs. We're going to need a lot more activists. You know, Larry Hamm needs to stop being by himself with his people out in the street. He needs some of us to join him, and we need to deal with some of these issues.
Okay. All right. I want to thank you for that input, Todd, impromptu, in fact, just for joining us. And just to make you aware, we're going to be actually tackling discussing this again live on air on this upcoming Saturday. I want to bring back in our student host, Andrew Coates. Andrew, from what you've heard so far, what's your response, if you have any at all?
My response to this is it's just a very blatant they've already known. The government has known about this for years. I was referring to a report. It was a report written by the FBI, so the federal law enforcement, all the way back in 2006, back during the Bush administration, W. Bush, October 17, 2006, where they wrote an extensive report speaking on the concerted efforts, the concerted organization of white supremacists to infiltrate law enforcement and to infiltrate the system of law. This process of trading in the Klan hoods for police badges and jeans and boots has been going on for well over 20 years, ever since about the 90s is when the report says that it really started to become more of a thing, because by that point their strategies were no longer effective, and so they decided to turn their strategies into more implicit strategies. If you want to change the law, you become the law. If you want to change minds, you become like them. You don't dress up in these certain ways. You have to speak their language. You have to adopt their practices. And that's what they've been doing to great effect, as we talk about right now. These things have been going on for years now, years and years, and the government has known about it, the federal government and almost certainly the state governments. But obviously nothing has been done about it. The fact that white supremacy is at the point where it is right now is no mistake. It's no accident. It did not happen overnight. This has been a concerted power effort for decades now that has gone ignored by the American government and by largely the American people. Back in 2006, we were still afraid of Muslims and Islams after the terrorist attacks of 9/11. That was our biggest fear. And we absolutely turned our back to the looming threat that white supremacy was coming up on the horizon. And now we're dealing with the fallout of that ignorance.
Okay. I want to bring in Tamir. a response to Todd or Andrew, either one, or comment that you might want to make?
Yeah, when you look at the United States government and the attacks against people like Marcus Garvey, for example, the attacks against the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in terms of their different ideals, those particular organizations was immediately dismantled, whereby, for example, not just, you know, Nation of Islam still exists, but the UNIA was dismantled to devastated when Marcus Garvey was actually arrested and for what they claim is mail fraud. And it was almost impossible for the organization to actually come back when he left. I mean, you're talking about an organization that had a great sense of economic awareness, whereby they was actually engaged in so many different areas. They had you and I had black nurses. You had you and I people that was they had their own newspaper, Negro World, that was very prominent during the Harlem Renaissance. And you had so many other different great possibilities and great leaders that came up out of that particular organization. It was a concerted effort to actually dismantle that particular organization. And it, you could read, you could see it in the history books. It's open public files. If you go onto the FBI website, there's open public files that illustrates this particular information. If you look at...
Okay, I just want to interrupt you for 1 second, and I apologize, but I want to say what you're alluding to. And if the government wanted to eradicate an extremist faction like the KKK, the Aryans, right, they could, in a snap of a finger, make it happen, right? Now, you're not saying this, but I am. There must be an inherent reason why these organizations, right, are still in existence after, you know, I'm not doing the math on it, but it's, if we go back to Birth of a Nation, we are back into, you know, the early time, turn of the century, right? These segregation, this has been going on too long. So,
yeah,
I
agree. D.W. Griffith movie actually depicted the reality of, and it actually gave a rebirth to the KKK. I mean, you're talking about the group of United Artists, which is a company that still exists today, but that particular movie gave a rebirth to the KKK. And we have to remember, lynching across the country became abundantly part of the abundance of terrorist acts against black folks when Reconstruction actually began. When Reconstruction began, KKK became prominent. You understand what I'm saying? And so it seems as if in many instances it's allowed to have these particular white terrorist organizations that exist. But when we try to create political awareness for our folks that we can actually have some equal footing and develop our own sense of affirmative action, we're dismantled.
Right. Right. Todd, your reaction to any one of the comments that you've just heard?
It's a very interesting time right now because we have so much information about what is going on, and yet this information is not freeing us, right? Sonia Sanchez always asks the question, you know, when something comes out, how does this free us, right? It makes me think about a documentary that Raoul Peck did that's available on Max, formerly HBO Max. He did this three-part documentary on colonialism and slavery. And one of the main themes that he puts throughout the documentary is that it's not knowledge we lack, right? When you look at the development of the right wing, they have billionaires who organize people, and they pretend these organizations are grassroots organizations. And these grassroots people, these so-called grassroots people, go and confront the power structure and make the power structure – change in the way it wants. And we're seeing that across the country now with the attacks on DEI, with the attacks that are happening in the school board. People are afraid to teach Martin Luther King. They're afraid to teach Rosa Parks. I mean, we've literally gotten to this point, right? And at some point, we're going to have to create some mechanisms that confront these people. I'm very inspired by Ron Perlman, the actor, because he has a tweet out, a video tweet, that has a lot of spiritual clarity to it. He talked about how, in terms of this strike that's happening in Hollywood, that these executives, that their goal is to make these writers lose their homes and their apartments.
Mm.
And his reaction to that was he got on Twitter, and he taped himself on Twitter, he recorded himself on Twitter, and he said, anybody who thinks that it's the right strategy to make someone lose their home or their apartment has got some karma coming. And he said, you know, there are many ways to lose a house. There are many ways to lose what you have. And if we find out which executive said this, they might lose a house. And see, that kind of language, that kind of confrontation, we've lost. Because we're afraid to confront these people. We've got to be honest about it. We're afraid to confront these people at the school board. We're afraid to confront these people on CNN and MSNBC. Because we don't want to end up the way Tiffany Cross ended up. Remember that name? Let's not forget Tiffany Cross. She was on MSNBC, right, a so-called friendly network. And she said some things in an interview that MSNBC didn't like. And the black woman head of NBC fired her.
Right.
So we're in this situation where we're not confronting our enemies, but then when we do confront our enemies or name them properly, we get punished. So it's not knowledge we lack. That's where we're at. And I don't know how to get beyond that, because getting beyond that is going to take some sacrifices. The people in Hollywood are lucky. They have millionaires who can help them. Right? Drew Carey's been paying for food for the writers for like 3 months now, spending millions to make sure those writers eat.
Wow.
Right? Now that we have the actors involved, some real millionaires involved, you know, those people are going to eat. I don't know whether they'll get to keep their apartments or houses, but they're going to eat, right? Because they have these millionaires backing them, right? Ron Perlman is okay. He can say what he said there. He's okay, right? But who do we have backing us if we go out and confront these people? Who do we have backing up with Tiffany Cross? We don't have that. And that's the issue that I see.
Okay. Wow. Thank you for that insightful response and actually bringing another spin to this particular topic. When we talk about the state of New Jersey, you know, as you heard, and I'm talking to the audience, we have to talk about it from not global, but across the country. I guess we did go global, right? So I want to bring in the Black Librarian. You have last words, because we're wrapping up the show, because it's, just that short. Go ahead. Last words, Black Librarian.
Last words is that it's going to come to the point where we have to make the conscious decision to move forward and sacrifice everything to make sure that we make the necessary change. Everything.
Okay. Our young student host, Andrew Coates, last words.
Well, I just want to say it's great to be on here. It's very important. I'll say what I said last time on the show. The way to stop this is to use the power that we all have, take action ourselves. Even if we give food to another person, a little mutual aid, passing information, go to the school board, confront them, run for offices so that we can stop this together. We have the power in our hands. They are the minority. We are the majority. We can do this together.
And Todd, do you want to add a closing remark?
No, I'm fine. I think we've had a full discussion.
Well, first of all, I want to, well, lastly, not first of all, I want to thank Todd Stephen Burroughs for joining us at the last minute, the Black Librarian, Tamir Davis, and, of course, our student host, Andrew Coates, and look forward to hearing more about the issues that concern the African-American diaspora and all people, right? And this was an attempt to talk about white supremacy in the state of New Jersey, but it kind of morphed into something a little bit bigger, right? And there's always a bigger picture, and I want to steal a line from Andrew Coates. If you're looking for change, look into yourself, because once you change your state of mind, you have and possess the ability to change the world. Thank you, everyone, for being part of the panel. And we conclude this particular segment that will continue next week. Thank you very much. Yeah.